Coming to you from the Forge of Freedom studio in the heart of America, a podcast dedicated to preserving freedom and inspiring personal success. Freedom is born and lives through you, the individual, and it dies in the shadows of tyranny. Motivating our listeners to become well-rounded, freedom-minded people with the body of an athlete, the mind of a stoic, and the spirit of a warrior. The Tree of Liberty lives on through you, the Forge of Freedom. And now here's your host, Alex Uli.
Hello, everyone, and welcome to another edition of the Forge of Freedom podcast. I'm your host, Alex Uli, and this is episode 62 of the Forge of Freedom. Today, it's September 21st. It's a Thursday as I'm recording this, and I wanted to share an article with you from the Mises Institute. It's the Mises Institute at Mises.org, M-I-S-E-S.org. And the Mises Institute, for those of you who don't know, I read a lot of their material, but they're a nonprofit institute in Auburn, Alabama, and they are dedicated to the promotion of Austrian economics, free market principles, and the ideas of individual liberty and freedom. And they had an article this week, published yesterday, as a matter of fact, by Connor O'Keefe. And the article is called "Striking Auto Workers Will Only Harm Their Own Livelihoods." And I thought that this article made some important points that are getting lost in most of the mainstream discussion about this auto workers strike that's been in the news a lot lately. For those of you who don't know, the big three auto workers, our big three automakers, Ford, General Motors, and Stellantis. And Stellantis is maybe a new term to many of you, but they own Chrysler, Jeep, and Ram, car companies, among others. But the workers of at these companies that are members of the UAW, the United Auto Workers Union, went on strike recently. And the union and their members appear to be pretty far apart from in negotiations from these auto companies. But I wanted to share this article, like I said, because I think it provides some insight and talks about some very important points that are being missed, if not ignored, in this discussion. But before I get into this article, I want to mention I will be heading down to the Second Amendment Foundation Gun Rights Policy Conference in Phoenix, Arizona, this coming weekend. And I will be releasing an episode in the near future about my experience down there and what that's like. It will be my first time attending. So make sure you stay tuned for that. And to make sure you get that, make sure you subscribe to the channel so that you don't miss out on that content and my discussion about the gun rights policy conference. Many of the most well-known names in the right to keep and bear arms arena will be there to speak about what's going on in the world of individual liberty and the right to keep and bear arms. So stay tuned for that. All right, with that said, let's get into this article a little bit. Again, it's called "Striking Auto Workers Will Only Harm Their Own Livelihoods," and it's by Connor O'Keefe at Mises.org, M-I-S-E-S.org. And I'll link to this in the show notes so you can check out the article yourself. And I'll also link to a few of the books and people that are mentioned in this article because I think they're worth checking out as well. So let's get into it. On Friday, September 15th, 12,700 members of the United Auto Workers Union walked off the job at plants owned by the big three automakers, Ford, General Motors, and Stellantis, which owns Chrysler, Jeep, and Ram. The walkout marked the beginning of a series of long-expected targeted strikes aiming to give the UAW leverage as it renegotiates contracts with the three companies. The strike is grounded in frustrations over worker compensation. Union members and their supporters point to high profits and CEO pay at the Big Three and compare them to stagnant wages and rising costs of living among auto workers. They feel like they're being ripped off. And they're right. Like the rest of the working class, auto workers are being ripped off. Decades of interventionism have built an economic system that harms workers while helping the corporate and political classes. The reason for this is monetary policy. Ever since President Richard Nixon abolished the gold standard in the early 1970s, a handful of bureaucrats at the Federal Reserve have been charged with determining the value of our currency. And those bureaucrats have decided that the dollar should lose value every year. They aim for a decline of 2% annually, but the rate has been higher in recent years. Dollar devaluation is a political choice, and it hurts workers. In an unhampered market, money becomes more valuable as societies grow wealthier, goods become better and more affordable, and money saved grows in value. Under our current inflationist regime, the opposite happens. Savings shrink in value by design. The result is spelled out by Seyfried Amos in his book, The Fiat Standard. He says, "The culture of conspicuous mass consumption that pervades our planet today cannot be understood except through the distorted incentives fiat creates around consumption. With the money constantly losing its value, deferring consumption and saving will likely have a negative expected value. Finding the right investments is difficult, requires active management and supervision, and entails risk. The path of least resistance, the path permeating the entire culture of fiat society, is to consume all your income, living paycheck to paycheck." We can see then how monetary policy leads to mass consumption, low savings, and hyper-financialization, all at the same time. In fact, one of the most notable examples of the financialization of the economy since the 1970s has been the growth of the Big Three automakers' financial arms, GM Financial, Ford Credit, and Stellantis Financial Services. In fact, as Ryan McMakin highlights, by the early 2000s, a majority of GM's profits were coming from its financial operations and not from automobile production. In other words, the automakers have profited from the very same government policies that devalue their workers' paychecks and savings. But monetary policy is only one part of the story. Governments at all levels restrict the supply of housing by limiting building. That makes housing less affordable. The federal government also bids up demand for healthcare services while restricting the supply of doctors and hospitals, and it shields drug manufacturers from competition. That makes healthcare much more expensive. Meanwhile, Washington's agricultural policy aims to prop up crop prices, which impacts the price of many foods. All of this artificially drives up the cost of living. That's bad enough for auto workers. But the Biden administration is also trying to force a transition to electric vehicles. For auto workers building engines, transmissions, and exhaust systems, that's a threat to their jobs. And because the ramp up of EV production is driven by politics rather than consumer demand, the transition is set to hurt all workers who rely on cars. Considering all that, it is obvious why auto workers are frustrated with their financial situation. But unfortunately, their justified anger has been hijacked by another source of their problems, the UAW. Support for labor unions rests on an economic myth from the mid-18th century. In short, it's the idea that companies make profits by not paying workers the full value of their labor. Eugene von Bombavirk dismantled this socialist exploitation theory 139 years ago when he introduced time into the analysis. Companies pay workers in the present for labor services that may lead to saleable goods in the future. because of the universal trait of time preference, the certainty of money now is often more appealing than the possibility of more money later, which is why so many people choose to sell their labor services on the job market. Bombavrick's insights are easy to see in auto manufacturing, where workers are paid upfront to help build cars that will be sold later. Still, the flawed idea that profits signify wage theft caught on, and in 1935, auto workers founded the UAW. The present strikes speak to the persistence of this myth. Labor unions often appeal to worker solidarity, but in truth, they epitomize the exact opposite. Because, as Murray Rothbard has shown, they can only raise wages for some workers by lowering the wages or eliminating the jobs of other workers. At the big three automakers, this can be seen in the heavy use of temporary and part-time workers who are placed on a lower pay tier, the elimination of which is ironically a core demand of the UAW strike. But this situation is just what's visible. All those who are blocked entirely from the jobs that would be available to them if not for the union remain unseen. America's auto workers are right to be angry about their economic situation, but the restrictionist labor demands of the UAW are a distraction that will, at most, help some auto workers at the expense of others. The real solution lies in ending union practices that unnecessarily pit workers against each other. Ending the policies that force companies to produce things consumers don't even want. Ending the multitude of government programs and political privileges that artificially raise the cost of living. And ending the monetary system that destroys the value of workers' paychecks and savings while propping up the financial class. Abolish all that, and the benefits will extend far beyond the auto industry. So there you go. There's the article from Mises.org, M-I-S-E-S.org, the article by Connor O'Keefe. Like I said, I will link to that in the show notes, but I wanted to share this article, like I said, because so much of the mainstream discussion about this issue is completely lost. And the most important points about this issue are completely lost. That the reason so many of these workers are striking is because their cost of living has grown exponentially because of inflation, because of government intervention in the market through regulation, through the incentivization of EVs, electric vehicles, through climate or regulatory mandates, all sorts of things that drive up the cost of living and devalue their hard-earned dollar. So I think the main purpose of sharing this article is to point out that the real enemy here, the real fight, is not between the workers and these companies, these auto manufacturers. It's with the same entity that all of us have a problem with, and that's the United States federal government, and more specifically, the Federal Reserve. Because by printing dollars and by Congress increasing the deficit, the value of our dollar becomes less and less every year. And when we work the same job at the same wage, we're working for less and less every day. So anyway, I hope you enjoyed that article. Please check it out. I encourage you to read it over again. One thing it mentioned in here is this book, The Fiat Standard by Safety and Amos. Excellent, excellent book. I'd encourage you to check out not only his book, but his Twitter page. I'll link to that in the show notes as well. He's got excellent commentary on Twitter and on YouTube. He's done some excellent interviews. He's also talked a lot about Bitcoin, and I mentioned Bitcoin specifically. A lot of times when people say crypto, they shut down. But Bitcoin, I think, has the opportunity to have a powerful effect on lots of people worldwide to break free from this government fiat system that hurts, that diminishes our hard-earned dollars. And I think Bitcoin can provide the world with a free market monetary system that's decentralized, that's not controlled by any one entity, and that's available to anybody, anywhere, and that's free from oppression of tyrannical governments. So I will likely talk about Bitcoin at some point in the future. Hopefully I can get a guest on to help discuss that topic. I think it's a topic that more people need to understand, because I think Bitcoin is in its infancy still and can still have a powerful impact on our world for the better. So with that, I'm going to close it up here, keep this podcast relatively short. Like I said, I'm about to head out for Gun Rights Policy Conference in Phoenix. I'm looking forward to that and get to meet some people that I talk to frequently over the air by video, but don't get to see much in person. So I'm looking forward to seeing some great people down there and to learning a lot and learning a lot from some of the best in the business. So thanks everybody for tuning in. Like I said, I always appreciate your support. I appreciate that you tune in and would appreciate if you'd like and subscribe and share this content, because the more people that hear the message of freedom, the more likely we are to maintain a world that is free and prosperous for generations to come. So thanks again, everybody, for tuning in. And remember, until next time, you are the Forge of Freedom.
Thanks for listening to this episode of Forge of Freedom. Be sure to subscribe wherever you heard this podcast so you never miss a future episode. For more information or to connect with Alex, you can go to forgeoffreedom.com or follow him on Twitter @ForgeOfFreedom. Until next time, remember, you are the Forge of Freedom.